On the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. We now have, of course, President Obama directing things. And many people, including some would say the president, say it's time to move on. We've got major problems, of course, the economy and, of course, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And President Obama has a lot on his plate. But some say that it's a little too soon to turn the page on the Bush administration, that the things they did were not just bad policy. They were beyond the pale of constitutional law, beyond the pale of humanity, that they actually rise to the level of war crimes. And one of the people that's saying that is my guest today. He is Michael Ratner. He's the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and he's the author of a book which is really more like a legal brief than a book, called The Trial of Donald Rumsfeld. Michael Ratner, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, I've always loved to be on your show, and I'm glad it's around.
Well, I thank you very much, and I'm really glad to have you, and I want to know all about your book. Before we get there, though, explain to our listeners why it's difficult to bring suit in the United States against Don Rumsfeld and the other neocons who did torture and extraordinary rendition and all the acts that you talk about in your brief.
Well, you know, I think if we had a Justice Department right now and maybe an independent prosecutor who would at least start a criminal investigation of what I call the torture program, particularly among high officials, Cheney, Bush, Rumsfeld, Tenet, et cetera, I think we could get prosecution. And interestingly, right now, of course, they're having a big debate in this country. I'm part of it, as to what should the Obama administration do about the fact that this country essentially went off the page of the prohibition of against torture and had a torture program. And that debate varies from, as you opened, saying, let's move on and not do anything, let's set up a truth commission, which is sort of a Leahy-type thing, Senator Leahy, or let's go to where the Center for Constitutional Rights and a number of other human rights groups are going, let's have a criminal investigation. So that debate is still going on right now here. But we don't know how it's going to come out completely. Obama, as you said, is saying turn the page, look forward. My view is, you know, that's somewhat disingenuous, because my view is that looking forward is looking forward to a country that doesn't torture. And the way you do that is you prosecute people to deter torture in the future. It's not really looking forward.
Even though you filed suit in Germany, you haven't given up on the possibility of violence in the United States.
Yeah, we did the German suit in 2004 and 2006. At that point, it was impossible. The Bush administration was in power. The Justice Department was headed by Gonzalez for a while, then Mukasey. They weren't going to do it. The military part of the possibility here of trials was headed by Rumsfeld at the Pentagon. They weren't going to do it. At that point, we were foreclosed from ever getting prosecution here. It was right now on the European cases, and I think they're going to be very good cases, ultimately, and it's going to be difficult for some of the key torture conspiracy people, Bush, Rumsfeld, et al., to travel to Europe. I think right now we're in the midst of a debate here in this country about it, and Europe will hold its hand. The European courts won't move until they see that the United States, which really has the primary obligation to investigate torturers on its own territory, whether it's going to do that or not. It does not.
The next few months,
then we go to Europe.
Well, I was just going to say, I thought you'd already filed. I know you filed in 2004, and the court said that, in essence, it's a political decision because Rumsfeld and the rest of them are still in power, right?
Well, here's what happened. We filed in 2004. We lost that case. The German court said, we still think the United States is looking at this. That's when you had all the Guba investigations and all that going on. So we'll wait. We filed again in 2006, again still during the Bush administration. The court then said, we're not sure we can have the prosecutor said, we're not sure we can have a real investigation here. We don't have the witnesses. We know they're not coming here. We're going to not go ahead with this case. That is on appeal now in the German courts. So that's on appeal in Germany.
We also the old 2004 case is still on appeal.
2004 case is gone. 2004 case was dismissed on the grounds the U.S. might still prosecute. The 2006 case is still pending.
The appeal is still
pending.
No, I'm just trying to understand. The German case you filed in 2004, it was dismissed. You appealed the 2004 case. Is that right? That's still pending?
That lost. No, that's gone. The 2004 case is lost. We filed a new case in 2006 because we said now it's been 2 years. The U.S. government has not yet investigated, so they're not going to. We think it's now appropriate for an international or a national tribunal to look at the crime of torture, which is an international crime.
Okay. And that case was dismissed, but it's on appeal.
That's correct, Mark. Right.
Okay. What do you think you can achieve? First of all, explain to our listeners why Germany would have jurisdiction at all over crimes that occurred in the United States, in Guantanamo Bay, and in Afghanistan, Iraq, and countries like that. And secondly, what you hope to achieve by your German case.
But, you know, there's a few crimes that are considered international crimes, and they're considered to be so outrageous and so heinous that every country in the world is considered to have the right to try people who commit those crimes. Among those are the ones that I'm sure you and your listeners are familiar with, are genocide, slavery. Piracy was the earliest example. A pirate could be brought to justice in any country. Piracy, slavery, genocide, and torture. And those crimes are considered really, they harm all when they're committed. And what the law says is that first the country in which those people live or the crimes are committed has the first obligation to prosecute people from their own country who commit those crimes. If that country does not do it, if, for example, the United States fails to prosecute Donald Rumsfeld for torture, then other countries are able to do that if they have laws that allow them to do that and if they so desire. Now, clearly, if Donald Rumsfeld goes into Germany and there's enough proof that he was involved in torture, then Germany at that point has a torturer on its territory, an alleged torturer, and has an obligation under the Convention Against Torture, a treaty, as well as just general international law, to begin an investigation of Donald Rumsfeld. So that
does that mean, Michael, that they would take Donald Rumsfeld in custody if he set foot in Germany?
It means they could. The answer is they could take Donald Rumsfeld in custody. And the case that I'm sure you're familiar with, Mark, and I know your listeners, some of them may be, is, of course, when Pinochet, the former dictator of Chile, went to England and was actually put into custody in England, an arrest warrant from Spain, no less, because of crimes he'd committed in Chile. So that's the classic case. And, of course, that's the case we try and replicate with someone like Donald Rumsfeld.
And it's interesting because in Pinochet's case, it was not an arrest warrant from the country where he committed the crimes, in other words, Chile. It was from Spain, and I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, there was any evidence that Pinochet committed crimes in the country of Spain, right?
That's correct.
So it was based entirely on this idea of international jurisdiction over human rights violations.
More or less, Mark. I mean, when I say more or less, there may have been a Spanish victim in that case, which gave them another leg up on that.
Well, that would make a huge difference, I would think, in terms of, you know, we're both lawyers here. I would think in terms of jurisdiction, if there were a Spanish victim, that would make the case much stronger.
Right, that's correct. If you look at this,
there's no German victim that you know of, right, in terms of Rumsfeld.
That's right. So, I mean, there are Spanish victims, and there was, I think if you look at this on a spectrum, it's conceivable and it's allowable for a court to actually begin an investigation and indict someone, even if they have no links to the country at all, if it's the crime of torture. That's clearly the hardest case, because as you're pointing out, that's really for universal jurisdiction. The next step would be if any of the crimes are obviously committed in your territory, that's an obvious case, or if some of your citizens were murdered in custody and like in Chile when they were there, or if there was a Spanish citizen taken by the U.S., which there happens to be. So in the case of Spain, Spain could begin an investigation of the CIA and Rumsfeld for what happened to some Spanish citizens at Guantanamo. But you're right, that makes the case much better than a pure universal jurisdiction case.
So is it the likely result, Michael, that Germany will say, as they sort of did in 04, we'll wait and see what the United States does, and then if they don't do something, then we may act? Isn't that the most likely result?
I think that's the most likely result right now, which is why what we're pushing for at the center is to try and still get a serious criminal investigation going here. If that doesn't happen, if it looks in the next 6 months like that's not going to happen, then we can go into countries in Europe. And there's some countries in Europe that had victims at Guantanamo. Obviously, Spain is one of the main ones.
So let's move back home then. What could the Obama administration, what could Attorney General Eric Holder do? What specifically, under American criminal law, could they try Don Rumsfeld, maybe John Yoo, the lawyer, and I know you have another 10 defendants in your brief. Who could they try and on what specific grounds? I mean, for example, the Geneva Convention, I know, bans torture, but I don't know that it allows, you know, that it specifically defines criminal law penalties for that, or maybe it does. What could we try them on?
Well, the Geneva Convention does. It has what's called grave breaches, but as you and I are both lawyers, we know that under our U.S. system, we have to implement those conventions with statutes that are criminal statutes. And we've done that in the United States. We have two criminal statutes. One is called the War Crime Statute, and that makes violations of certain provisions of the Geneva Conventions criminal, and including inhumane treatment and torture. The second statute is called the Anti-Torture Statute, and that makes torture criminal. So you would begin an investigation of Rumsfeld and others under two statutory bases, two crimes. One is torture, and one is war crimes. Related, but of course, torture is a more severe form of inhumane treatment, and war crimes can include inhumane treatment. That's where you would begin. And when I say there's a need to begin, if you look at, we've had hundreds, maybe we have thousands of pages of testimony and documents now about what this administration did. And one example, and I think it'll probably be suffice or two, is Dick Cheney, our former vice president, saying, I was one of the people who approved waterboarding, a form of drowning that gets interrogation technique that's classically considered torture. You then have the Obama administration, Eric Holder, as well as Panetta, head of the CIA, saying waterboarding is torture. And therefore, you have someone saying, I waterboarded, and Cheney says, and I would do it again. Obama saying, torture, and then you have a criminal statute. So you have really all of the elements that are necessary to begin a criminal investigation of our vice president, our former vice president, Dick Cheney. That's just one example.
Michael, let me ask
you
this.
More, but that's one.
Well, let me ask you this, because I've seen the names of the 12 defendants in your brief, and you've gone pretty high. I like that. I like that you haven't gone after, for example, Lindy England, the 18-year-old young woman, from West Virginia who did some awful things at Abu Ghraib, but clearly these weren't her ideas. She was told. So I like that you started at the top, but I have to say you didn't start at the very top. You have Dunn Rumsfeld listed. You don't have listed George W. Bush or Dick Cheney. Why not?
You know, I appreciate what you're saying, because I share with you that this is not about going after lower people or lower-level military people. It's about getting the guys who authored this policy and put it into practice, and that's the top. Now, in the book, at the time I wrote it, there is something called head of state immunity under our law, and that really says that essentially the president and the vice president cannot, while they are sitting in office, be investigated and prosecuted for these criminal statutes that took place while the violations in their office. Now that they're out of office, they are open to criminal investigation and prosecution. And it's interesting that the UN rapporteur, the UN person in charge of torture, within a day within a day of Cheney and Bush leaving office, said now they're and someone should start looking at what they did. So I didn't include them in the book except as unindicted co-conspirators, because at that point I wanted to really take the metaphor, whatever you call it, that I was doing in the book of being a serious way of looking at what a criminal trial would look like. I didn't want it just dismissed immediately, saying, well, Michael, these people are immune right now. So I let them as unindicted co-conspirators.
Okay, but you don't see any legal barrier to going after them today. I mean, Pinochet was also a head of state, right? So there's no reason today, now that they're no longer in office, you could go after Cheney as much as you could go after Don Rumsfeld, right?
Oh, absolutely. And Cheney is, you know, if you had to pick the really bad guys here, I mean, Bush, you know, he signed a bunch of orders, and he was obviously had to be that. But Cheney was really one of the architects of the entire program. Rumsfeld was one of the architects. And one person we don't hear much about who won the Medal of Freedom is George Tenet, who was head of the CIA. But because they're all former officials, none of them, Cheney or Bush, or the others, obviously, are going to have any kind of immunity for carrying out violations of the most fundamental prohibition against torture.
Now, you're certainly right about Cheney and Rumsfeld. Tenet is an interesting character. I don't doubt that he helped in many ways. But after he was, well, I don't know if the word fired is right, because forcibly retired, perhaps, is the right word. He sort of backed off some of the most extreme things that Cheney had done. Do you consider Tenet equally, I don't know if liable is the right word, let's just say equally criminal to Cheney and Rumsfeld, or perhaps a more minor criminal?
Yeah, and I consider Tenet up there, and here's why. There was roughly at least 100, maybe more people were sent to secret CIA sites around the world where they were tortured. While Tenet was head of the CIA, he was aware of it, he was in charge of the program, and we know very little about it. We know that some of those people were waterboarded, that's been admitted. We know very little about it. The most we know really is from chapter, I think it's 6 of Jane Mayer's book, The Dark Side, and there she describes what happened a bit at these secret sites. And it's quite horrendous. I'm not going to say it makes Guantanamo look great, because it doesn't. Guantanamo is very bad. But it was very, what went on at these secret sites. And the problem is getting at what the CIA does, if I'm frank about it, is the hardest to do. And when Senator Levin and Senator McCain did an investigation recently at the Armed Services Committee of the torture program, you read that, the summary of the report, the full report is not out yet, but the summary of the report says that they were stonewalled completely by the CIA and what went on. So my view about George Tenet here is that he is deeply implicated in severe torture against people at these secret sites. But again, we have only a few facts that I just brought out.
You mentioned that you think that the American citizens, Rumsfeld and all of them, Tenet, they could be prosecuted under the war crimes laws, which basically bring the Geneva Conventions home to America, and also the Anti-Torture Act. I'm curious to know if any American has ever been prosecuted under those acts in the past. Or are these just statutes on the books that have never been used?
You know, that's a really good question. the torture statute, which is only, maybe 10 years old since we signed the convention, only been used once. And that was just recently. It was used against Charles Taylor, Jr.,
the head of Liberia,
the son of the dictator in Liberia, and he was accused of torture in Liberia, and he was brought into snuck into the state, was found, and was recently convicted under the torture statute. That's the only.
So he's in jail in the United States.
He actually is a citizen of the United States. He was born here and left when he was 2. So we make different things out of that.
No, that's interesting.
That's
he right
case.
Now serving a jail sentence in the United States,
yes.
Under that act?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Charles Taylor
Very
is
interesting.
Serving a jail sentence.
I would suspect,
for a crime
though,
that committed in Sierra Leone.
I would suspect, though, that American citizens who committed crimes – well, I guess I can't say in the United States because, Guantanamo Bay isn't the United States and Iraq. But in terms of the military doing things, I think back to the Spanish-American War in 1898, where I know that we had court-martialed some of our soldiers for doing waterboarding, of all things. And I know that in World War II, we put some Japanese soldiers to death for waterboarding our men and women. But all of that was done under a military tribunal type thing, not under the civilian courts. Do you think it's easier or harder to do things under a military tribunal to go after people who torture than the way you're trying to go?
That's a really, a tough question. I mean, obviously, when you're looking at Japanese being tried by an American military tribunal, they're probably going to be more severe than when they're trying their own soldiers. And in the waterboarding cases that you're referring to, came out of the Philippines, and people were not given very severe sentences. waterboarding. There were, I mean, I think very less, I mean, very little time, small fines, et cetera. So my guess is that the military in these cases is going to be somewhat reluctant to convict their own of practices. On the other hand, you know, these are all hard cases. You come into a federal court in the United States and you're dealing with the issue of, well, weren't these people doing something to try and protect America, even though it was illegal? And so they got to sell to a jury that that's not a good enough reason to torture people. The best interest, you think you're acting in the country's best interest is the statements by dictators, unfortunately, all over the world when they break laws. So you have, I think both, there's nothing easy about these cases is what I would. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be done, but there's nothing easy about them.
I think it's clear there's nothing easy, and that's why I'm asking you these hard questions. Yes. One other question I have is about the low-level people at Abu Ghraib, people like Linda England, and I think, is it Chuck Gardner? I forgot his name. Who was prosecuted for what happened at Abu Ghraib, and why was no one higher up prosecuted?
Well, I think I would say that, I mean, very low-level people, I think, I forgot the highest-level person, but it wasn't very high. And the person who, the highest level person, I don't even remember what his level was. Whether
well, Sanchez was, I think, he was exonerated. He was the
right,
more
Sanchez,
higher level
basically,
person.
If you look at what happened to Sanchez, who actually was involved in this, although he's been somewhat, what's the way to say it, he's been a little apologetic. But I think Sanchez did not get his fourth star, as I recall, and is no longer.
Yeah, some punishment. Some punishment, right? You torture someone and you don't get your fourth star. That talk
so
about
I think
a
that's what happened
wrist.
To Sanchez. And then Karpinski.
But there are people in prison, right?
Yes, but they're very low level. Like there are people you mentioned, Brainer and Lindy England. And as soon as you went up the chain of command, no one got prosecuted. And the reason for that is seems obvious politically, is the administration, when those photos came out, was obviously mortified because that was not a great thing to come out. And they had to figure out a way that they would not be blamed for it on a high level. But this was, quote, bad apples. And so obviously, if it's only bad apples, can't go very high up the chain of command. So two things happened. They prosecuted the lower chain of command to prove that it was bad apples. And the investigations were done by people of a lower level rank that could not look above their rank as to what happened. And the highest ranking investigator was General Antonio Taguba, who wrote the Taguba report. He was a two-star, and he said he couldn't look above his rank to figure out whether Rumsfeld and others were involved. But after he left office, he recently wrote that there was no question that war crimes were committed by this administration. That's practically a quote. And he said the only thing that waits to be seen is whether people are going to be held accountable. So he knows they were committed. He just was prohibited from going up the chain of command.
So is it too late to go after the Abu Ghraib war crimes, to say that the Bush administration didn't prosecute them because, well, they were in charge of them, but to actually use those? We've already put people in jail, after all, Linda England and Charles Grainer. And I believe, it was under these same anti-torture laws that you're talking about, right? Or is it under the military
law? Well, they get charged under similar, but those were military, you mentioned this, but those are military courts-martials. And there is a provision of the criminal statute in the military, Uniform Code of Military Justice that prohibits torture like the one in the U.S. So they were convicted under what we call the UCMJ or the Uniform Code of Military Justice. But
it's
the same statute, really.
Right, but can anyone else today, or is it too late, go after the tortures at Abu Ghraib under the UCMJ? In other words, can people go after the bosses of Charles Grainer and Linda England or not? Is that too late?
They can if they're still in the military. If they're detached from the military, I think then they don't any longer have jurisdiction. I'm not 100% on that, so I don't want to be.
That sounds like a crazy law, the idea that you can commit torture in the military and then just when they come to take you away, you can leave the military. That seems like a very ineffective law. Let me give out the phone number because, by the way, I only have Michael Ratner here for the first half hour. I'd love to have him all hour, but I understand he's an important man with important things to do. If you want to get in your question, you need to call right away, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. There'll be plenty of time to talk with me in the second half hour, but if you want to ask a call directly to Michael Ratner, call in now, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Michael, I want to ask you about John Yoo. I did a whole show yesterday on John Yoo and his legal memos, and whether or not someone who writes a legal memo, who gives an opinion as a matter of law, can be prosecuted for war crimes.
You know, there's two things that are important to say about John Yoo in that respect. One is, and then I'll answer your question. The first one is that John Yoo is not simply writing legal memos, sitting in an office, giving advice. John Yoo was, according to the lawsuit against him, for example, by Jose Padilla, who was one of the people who was detained and tortured, arguably at the behest of some of the memos by Yoo, that he was actually an instrumental in what happened to what happened to people. That those memos were not abstractions, but they were memos that facilitated what happened to people. That they weren't simply abstract, and that he sat on a committee called the War Council of lawyers that actually determined to a certain extent of what happened to Padilla. So it wasn't just legal advice. So that's the first thing. The second thing, let me answer your question, assuming it's legal advice. What we think happened here is that he was gone to, and he was asked to shape memos to accommodate a policy that was already going on. So Rumsfeld was already involved in carrying out certain kinds of enhanced interrogation techniques, inhumane treatment of people at Guantanamo. But then they realized they may need to protect themselves and wanted to protect with memos. And then what we think happened, and that'll come out, I hope, soon in this investigation within the Office of the Professional Responsibility of Justice, that when Yoo was gone to, that he shaped the memos to support the policy rather than to be independent. So that's a second issue that makes them not just pure legal. But even as pure legal memos, it didn't happen the way I said. There is a doctrine that if you write a legal memo that is unwarranted, that takes a view of the law that is completely outside of clearly established legal principles, and consequences of that legal reasoning are foreseeable and that someone will be tortured or whatever, that you can be held liable. And we know that from cases that went on at Nuremberg, from cases that go on with mafia lawyers who give their clients advice that is unwarranted legal advice that is a way to get outside the law. And a good example is, let's say, we know that it's illegal to segregate blacks from whites in schools. But let's say I have a deep, sincere belief that it's legal to do so, and I become the OLC at the Office of Legal Counsel, and I write a memo saying, well, for national security reasons, or there's too much violence in the schools, we have to separate blacks and whites. And that's an unwarranted legal opinion. You can't do it. It's just outside the law. And you could then be prosecuted for that. You could certainly be disbarred for it and disciplined.
Well, I'm just going to say, I've often thought that it may be hard to put John Yoo in jail, but it shouldn't be that hard to take his license to practice law away, whether it's in D.C. or the state of California. And I hope that someone, if not you, but it could be you, your center could file a bar action, right?
Sure, of course we could. And I think, you know, I think there's things going on. They generally have to be filed in secret. I mean, those processes start confidential.
Well, I hope in secret that you'll get right to it. Let me ask you this. There is the case you mentioned, Padilla v. Yoo. It's in the courts now. We talked about it at length yesterday, so you don't have to explain what it is. My listeners know. But it's for $1 nominal damages and, more importantly, the finding that John Yoo violated Padilla's constitutional rights. What do you think are the chances of success of that lawsuit?
I think it's looking up a bit here. You know, the argument took place a couple days ago. It's Padilla v. Yoo, and it really went through the same issues that I've just described. The government came in, the Obama administration, said, well, you can prosecute someone for, you can't get damages for someone for legal advice. The plaintiffs argued this was more than legal advice. We charge in our complaint, and if you read the complaint, it says he's part of the War Council. He was in on the decision making. Padilla's treatment was really as a result of what Yoo was saying, and the judge was skeptical about dismissing the case, is what it sounded like. You never know what's going to happen, of course, but he was skeptical about it. So my guess is that case may survive, most likely will survive, what lawyers and you and I know is a motion to dismiss it, and we'll go on to discovery, which could be pretty interesting as to what happened to Padilla by Yoo. So that's a very, very important case. What's also very important in what's going on now is the Obama administration is being put in, I think, almost an unethical situation. They have to defend you. So far, they at least have decided to defend you in court. They're defending Rumsfeld in court, and they're taking positions that are not necessarily the positions the Justice Department wants to take on what's constitutional and what's not, or they're not taking those, and then they're not giving a full defense to you or Rumsfeld or others. I think at some point they're going to have to get out of these cases, and those guys are going to have to get their lawyers.
Well, it's certainly my hope that some of this is the fact that President Obama's only been president for 50 days. He doesn't have a fully staffed Justice Department. It's my hope that it's really just holdovers doing this and that he'll have time to look at this and change his mind. Our half hour is almost up. I do want to ask one last important question, though. And pardon all these technical questions, but I ask them because you know a lot about these things, and I like to learn on my radio show. So let me ask you about the Military Commissions Act, because I fear that this act, which was, of course, passed when George Bush was in office back when the Republicans were in control of Congress, I fear that this act may in some way exonerate these officials from Bush and Cheney on down through Rumsfeld for some of these war crimes. What do you think?
Now it's a good question. There was a provision in that act. They call it a, quote, amnesty provision. It's not really amnesty. It's a redefinition of war crimes, the statute you and I were discussing earlier. And unless that act is repealed, particularly that section, that there will be a certain protection given to a number of our high officials for war crimes. There's some war crimes that will still exist, even with the, quote, amnesty of that act. Serious, you know, I mean, torture will still be a war crime. But a lot of the conduct that was was inhumane, is exonerated in some way or given amnesty by that act. So one demand.
I don't know that a repeal would help, Michael, because the Constitution says you can't have an ex post facto law. It would seem to me that if you have crime that's if you have act that's criminal and you make it non-criminal and then you recriminalize it, you're kind of home free, aren't you?
Well, this is a good question. Let's say it was the timing of what you're saying is very interesting. Let's say you commit a crime. At the time you commit a crime, there's a criminal statute that says that is a crime. And so you could be indicted. But then they change the statute and says, well, it's no longer a crime, but you committed it already at a time it was a crime. So if you take away the statute that says it's no longer a crime, is that the same as an ex post facto? Is that the same as saying an ex post facto is usually you commit an act that's not a crime, and then they make it a crime later. This, you committed an act that was a crime, then they say it's no crime, and then it's you can make it a crime again. So I'm sure this question has never come up.
Well, you're the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, so I feel like you're the proper guy to ask this obscure question of law.
Well, it was a good question.
What do you think?
It's not an obscure question. It's one because they may repeal that section, and that's an important question.
Right. Any idea how it'll come out, or is this just throw the coin up in the air?
I mean, we'll certainly talk to say it's not ex post facto because the acts of torture were committed at a time in which they were. And that's very different than committing an act when it's not criminal and then making it criminal later. That's my argument.
I mean, I would think so. I would think that if you used an illegal drug when it's illegal and that drug was later legalized, you could still, even without changing the law again, be prosecuted for breaking the law at the time it was against the law. I mean, if I get a parking ticket and later on they make parking legal there, they could still make me pay that fine, I think. So I would hope that that you still could go after them on the grounds that it was illegal at the time they committed it, which was prior to the Military Commissions Act being passed.
That's what I would think as well, Mark.
Well, I'll tell you, I've really enjoyed this. A half hour flew by whenever I get involved in a technical legal discussion. For me, the time goes quickly. I hope
you're a lawyer. How many hosts are lawyers, Mark?
Well, I don't know. I tell you, I'd love to have you on the full hour, but I promised I'd let you go after half an hour.
Yeah,
we're going
to
take
go,
a break.
Actually, so I apologize. I'd love to be on.
No, I understand. I want to thank you very much
for coming to the show,
and invite anyone else who has questions to call in 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll take a quick break and then take your calls. Michael Ratner, thank you so much for coming on the Inside.
Thank you, Mark, for having me. I appreciate your work. Bye.
We'll be right back after this.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. More reasons pour in every day, not only for a truth commission, but for prosecution of Bush administration officials all the way up to the top. The latest comes from Cy Hirsch, who uncovered so many of the Bush scandals, including Abu Ghraib. As you may have heard by now, Hirsch was at the University of Minnesota on Tuesday night at a forum on America's constitutional crisis when he dropped two more bombshells. The first had to do with domestic spying by the CIA. After 9/11, said Hirsch, the CIA was very deeply involved in domestic activities against people they thought to be enemies of the state. The second was even creepier. He said that Cheney was running an executive assassination ring, essentially. The assassins were going into countries and finding people on a list and executing them and leaving. Said Hirsch, they reported directly to the Cheney office. These revelations demand the most serious attention. On top of last week's release of a Justice Department memo justifying the use of the military here at home and proposing the suspension of the First Amendment, they show just how perilously close we came to losing our democracy. The fascists weren't at the gates. They were inside the White House. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I hope you had a chance to hear the first half of the show. I asked a lot of detailed questions, but Michael Ratner took some hard pitches and hit them out of the park. I think he's really got a handle on the very complex legal nature of filing a war crimes suit or prosecuting the Bush administration. Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld on down for the war crimes they committed. Everything from torture and waterboarding to extraordinary magician, which is taking people and sending them to other countries to be tortured. Everything from taking American citizens like Jose Padilla, putting him in trial without access – not in trial. Excuse me. He would have been happy to have a trial. Putting him in detention without access to a lawyer, without even being told the charges against him and kept incommunicado, basically. To the surveillance, to spying on virtually all of us without a warrant. The crimes are legion. They are long. And I disagree with the president when he says that it's time to move on. I don't believe we can move on until we know what's there. All right? I mean, one of the things about the South African Truth Commission was not that they prosecuted everyone that did apartheid. If you prosecuted everyone in South Africa that practiced apartheid, well, you'd have millions of people in jail. But the thing about the South African Truth Commission is, at the very least, they found out. They used subpoena power. They used the threat of prosecution to find out what happened. As we learned from Seymour Hersh, there's still things we don't know about. Right? I mean, I knew about the torture. I knew about the secret prisons. I knew about the cherry-picking of intelligence. I knew about Jose Padilla. But an executive assassination ring? Well, that's news to me. Except that Seymour Hersh has a troubling record of usually being right about these things. I would take that allegation very seriously. So we have to go after them, but it's not easy to do so. One of the reasons why I asked Michael Ratner so many technical legal questions is to impress upon you the difficulty of the legal thicket. Outside the United States may well be easier than within the United States. We talked about Germany and many other countries, it's not just Germany, England, Belgium, having universal jurisdiction over war crimes, and about the fact that England tried Pinochet. But generally that only happens when there's pretty much universal belief that this person is a war criminal, as in the case of the son of the dictator of Liberia, Charles Taylor, who Michael Ratner pointed out had been convicted in the United States. Germany, I suspect, and so does Michael Ratner, will wait to see what we do first. And that's appropriate. It is appropriate that we try our war criminals first. Indeed, the universal jurisdiction, I would venture to say, and I would agree, should only be tried when all other venues have failed. A country should be allowed to try its own dictators first. And if they fail, then I believe in universal jurisdiction. You've got to go after them. So how can we try our war criminals? Well, Michael Ratner points out the Geneva Conventions have actually been codified into American criminal law, but he didn't know of a case where they'd actually been used against high-up political officials, and I think that's understandable, too. It's very hard to prosecute high political officials. Many judges and juries, notwithstanding the law, are going to say, it's just a policy difference. Can't criminalize policy differences. And indeed, we shouldn't criminalize policy differences. But as Michael Ratner points out, the writings of John Yoo, the memos that authorized the conduct, mostly by Dick Cheney. I mean, honestly, as Ratner points out, if you want the real enemy, it's not Bush, it was Cheney. I mean, frankly, I think it'd be easier to do a criminal case against Cheney than Bush. Bush probably signed a bunch of things. But I suspect that history will show us that Cheney had detailed knowledge of what was going on. And George Bush was basically just signing on. That's not to say in any way that Bush is exonerated from his conduct, but there are levels of evil. And Dick Cheney, I think, reaches a higher level. In any case, how do we prosecute them? Well, as Michael Ratner pointed out, that now that they are no longer heads of state, it's easier to go after Bush and Cheney, as well as Rumsfeld and the like, and I like that. But it's going to be very hard to do so under military commissions. I mean, you can't really – can you prosecute an ex-commander-in-chief under military law? I don't know. Michael Ratner didn't know either. He seemed to think that once you leave the military, you're outside of the military – the code of military justice. He wasn't sure, and I'm not sure about that either. I would think that you could still do the crimes while you were in the military. But I don't really think this should be done by a military commission. I think it should be done – in a civilian court, federal court, before a jury of peers. So will the Bush administration be prosecuted? Most likely not. I mean, let's be honest here. Most likely not. Not because the crimes aren't deserving of prosecution, but because President Obama is likely to believe that the political danger of prosecuting ex-administration officials outweighs the good by putting these people in jail. And I do suspect if President Obama were to prosecute these people, then you would find the Republicans would then prosecute people in the Obama administration for real or imagined injuries, and you could have tit-for-tat problem where every new administration prosecutes the old one, and we certainly don't want that. So I say there's a compromise. And the compromise is based on what happened in South Africa. It's based on the work that Senator Leahy is trying to do. It's based on something that I think few Americans can argue with, from the left to the right, from President Obama to even President Bush. And that is that the truth come out. Right? We don't have to make a decision on prosecution right now. We don't know all the facts. I don't like to make decisions till I have all the facts. Let's get the facts. Let's get all the facts. You know, the only reason why we have the memos that John Yoo wrote, publicly disclosed, is because Jose Padilla's lawyers demanded them in discovery in his trial. May also be because Obama felt it was appropriate politically to disclose them. But we have more information now than we did a week ago. So I could do a whole show yesterday where I know now, that's where I didn't know a week ago. I didn't know where John Yoo got his crazy idea that torture only meant ending a bodily function of an organ. I thought it was a crazy idea, but I didn't know where he came up with it. Now I know. He came up with it from an obscure Medicare statute that tells about when you get emergency hospital care. In other words, he pulled it out of nowhere. But I couldn't prove he pulled it out of nowhere until I read the memos. So let's get the facts. Just the facts. And I think by asking for the facts, it's a great way to persuade everyone from the Obama administration to even some reasonable people on the right. And believe it or not, there are some reasonable people on the right. We're just getting facts. We're just finding out what happened. We didn't say we're going to criminally prosecute. No, we won't take it off the table. That's a silly phrase used about impeachment. We won't take it off the table, but it's not on the table now. It's not on the table. We're simply gathering facts. Let's find out exactly what Cheney ordered and when, what words he used, and if people cover it up. Now, if Scooter Libby doesn't want to say, well, then we're going to put him in jail until he does say, because we're just trying to find the facts. If Donald Rumsfeld doesn't want to talk about his conversation with Dick Cheney, we will put him in jail until he says, because we're just trying to find out the facts. And should some of this be endangering national security, which is kind of a strange thing to say, frankly, from a man like Dick Cheney, who outed a CIA agent, which George Bush Sr. called the most traitorous of acts. But even so, if there are national security secrets, I have no problem with a judge reviewing them behind closed doors. So that gets rid of the argument that I'm sure some on the right will make. Oh, no, we can't find out the truth because we find out it damages national security. No. You simply allow it before a judge and you blank out the stuff that's national security. But I would suggest to you not much is national security right now, and there's a reason for that, because most of the crimes have already been committed. These aren't ongoing operations. These aren't operations where the names of the people who did the torture are that important. If Cheney ordered Prisoner X, Jose Padilla, or anybody else to be tortured, then Cheney ordered Prisoner X to be tortured. What is left to be kept secret? Where's the national security interest in keeping that quiet? I can't think of one. Let's get the facts. Let's demand the facts. We have a right to know the facts as the American people. And then if the facts lead us to prosecute, well, that's just the facts talking. Susan from Oregon, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Susan, are you there?
Hi, Mark.
Hello. What are your thoughts on my conversation with Michael Ratner?
Well, my comment is, I find it ironic that the people who are very, very low on the totem pole probably got less time than tossed a couple of shoes at George Bush and didn't even touch him.
You mean like Lindy England and Charles Grainer and people like that?
Some of those people are already out of jail. This guy has been sentenced to 3 years, and he has reportedly been tortured and beaten.
By the Iraqis. I can't say I'm surprised by that. Although I have to say, in my view, Grainer and Lindy England, while I do think they should be put in jail, shouldn't be put in jail near as long as the people who ordered them to do the acts. Because as much as I don't have sympathy for the people who are just following orders, I do have more sympathy for them than the people who gave the orders. They're worse.
Exactly. What I find appalling is, well, not appalling, but I find it sad that the government of Iraq could not find it in their judicial heart to see the fact that there was no harm done and show more mercy than we certainly showed to their to our victims.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. The government of Iraq is right now it's hardly independent. They are trying to be, and I hope one day they will be. I certainly do. But I'm certain that there was pressure from the ex-Bush administration. I can't tell you whether it was from the Obama administration or not. But I'm sure that they knew that the world was watching and that they didn't feel they could let them off. I wouldn't be surprised, though, Susan, if a year from now when nobody's watching, they let the guy go. We'll see. I have no idea.
I really hope it wouldn't surprise me. I really hope they do. But, you know, I just hope that the Iraqis don't model their justice system after ours, because ours is nothing to write home about.
The sad thing is ours could be. The sad thing is we have the laws on the books. I mean, that's what Michael Ratner was pointing out. What we really need is the political will. And it's very hard for any country, whether it's Iraq or the United States of America, to prosecute their ex-leaders. It's very, very hard to do. I mean, you look at Richard Nixon, right? I mean, there's no question the guy was guilty. Not that there's any question about Rumsfeld or Cheney. I don't think there is. But here was something where there was no doubt about it. He was, you know, he would have been impeached had he not resigned. And then Gerald Ford gave him a pardon. So even Richard Nixon did serve no time. And I just think it's very hard to prosecute because people will see it as a political witch hunt rather than the actual crimes they did, which is why I want to get all the information out there, because I don't think most Americans realize the extent to which the very highest people in the administration, Cheney on down and Bush, were involved in this. I think there are still Americans who believe, including probably my right-wing friend Mike Lane, who comes on my show from time to time, I think there's some who might say the spin bite that Lindy England and Charles Grainger were just, you know, we were running amok, when that is absolutely not the evidence. And that's why I want to get all the evidence out and before the American people, because I think we can change the views of most Americans if we can get this evidence out before them.
Well, there's always the Military Commissions Act.
Well, that's what we talked about. I think we can. It's not going to happen. No, it's going to require a civil case, and it's going to frankly, I got to give the lawyer for Jose Padilla credit. That's a great suit. Someone needs to sue Cheney now, and someone needs to sue Bush, and someone needs to sue Rumsfeld.
Why can't we go in and repeal the Military Commissions Act?
Well, it has been repealed. It has been repealed. Oh, wait.
No, excuse me.
It has not been repealed. Part of it has been repealed. They did change back some of the military tribunals in the last Congress, the Democratic Congress with Bush as president. But you're right. It has not entirely been repealed. No, you're absolutely right. And we could, and I think it may well be. I think they may well get rid of all of it. But as I talked about with Michael Ratner, it doesn't matter whether it's repealed or not. They committed the crimes while it was illegal.
Yeah.
And so that's all we need.
If you have the law, it's still a war crime. It's still illegal.
The problem is not the law. The problem is the political will. As Nanette writes in the chat room, it's because most Americans don't want to believe our leaders could do such horrible things. I think Nanette is exactly right.
America better grow up and wake up.
That's why I think disclosure is the best way to go about all of these things. That I don't. It's hard to argue with Pat Leahy when he says, just get this all out. Find out what happened. But, you know, it is hearing. I don't know if you noticed this. Go ahead.
You don't want it to be one of those commissions where it gets buried either, though.
That's true. one of the things I noticed at Pat Leahy's commission was very few people showed up. There were maybe two or three Democrats and I think one Republican who left. The Republicans are doing their best to bury it in the press. And they know they can't stop it because Leahy's in charge, the Judiciary Committee. They can't stop him from doing it. But what they can do is basically focus on other things. Let's focus on earmarks. Let's not focus on war crimes.
Exactly.
And it's up to you and me and everyone on the Horn and everyone in the liberal blogosphere to remind people of what happened. And the reason I think it's important, it's important to sell it to moderates. This is not about revenge, at least not in my case it certainly isn't. This is not about revenge. This is not about punishing people who I think are – it's not even about punishing people I think are evil. It isn't. I like punishing people I think are evil. But
no,
it's much more important than that.
It's happening again.
Exactly. That's why it's so important. It's not about the fact that I'd love to see Dick Cheney in jail, although I admit that I would. It's about the fact that if we don't put Dick Cheney in jail, then some other president or vice president in some future time might well be inclined to do it again.
And to be fair, it could very well be a Democrat.
To be fair, it's happened before.
Yeah.
It's happened before. Under Eisenhower, we did a coup against Mossadegh, and that brought the Shah of Iran to power, and we all know how that turned out, right?
Yeah.
We've toppled all kinds of leaders in the past. We've done executive assassinations. In fact, before Gerald Ford signed the executive order against assassinations, the United States was assassinating people right and left. Kennedy tried to kill Castro.
Yeah.
But since Gerald Ford signed that executive order, at least it has been illegal. And now it appears, according to Seymour Hersh, that Dick Cheney may have violated that very executive order. And if so, we got to go after him. Otherwise, it's meaningless.
Yep. Well, I will let you go. And it's been nice talking to you, Mark.
Nice talking to you. I always appreciate when you call in. We've only got a couple minutes left. And let me say this. I don't want to get the legal details lost in the overall moral thicket. There are legal complications. I tried to go over them with Michael Ratner so you could understand the difficulty that it faces. But at the end of the day, the truth is more important than any prosecution. We've got to know what happened. And that's why I would hope, and you know, most of you are probably not from Vermont. I'm sure you're not. But even the non-Vermonters need to give Senator Patrick Leahy's office a call and give him support because he's not getting a lot of support. He's not getting a lot of support from his fellow Democrats, and he's certainly not getting any support from Republicans. And let them know that he is doing the right thing, the moral thing. And I'll give you another office to call, and that's John Conyers, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee from Michigan. He has been after these people for 8 years now. Well, for a long time, his hands were tied. Nancy Pelosi told him impeachment was off the table. Impeachment's gone. No impeachment anymore necessary. Let's just find out the facts. And the best thing about the House and the Senate Judiciary Committees is that they have subpoena power, the power to demand documents, the power to demand witnesses, the power to find out all those emails, to find the facts. From an administration that used to fix the facts around their policy, to fix the law around their policy, let's find out what the facts are. And that's something John Conyers can do, and that's something that Patrick Leahy can do, and they don't even need a vote to do it. They don't even need a vote. And I have to tell you this, the contempt citations that we talked about for Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton already, we're finding that they are starting to have to testify. The Democrats are in charge. And they have every right to find out what happened over the last 8 years. Hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in next week to more of the Inside Scoop. Next up, of course, your hillbilly elitist, Bob Kincaid. This is Mark Levine, signing off.